Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
Philo the Philosopher. I'm going to try and do a data dump about this. Well, it's not a data dump, but talk about him a bit. And there will unfortunately be a bit of wind. You can set your clock by it, so to speak. But you can set your clock by the wind in Australia. There's a big August wind, and then there's a still time, and then there's winds again. So there'll be the odd wind here, but as I'm down for it, you can hear the dogs barking. Now, Philo the philosopher, Philo of Alexandria. So he sort of is he's a philosopher, I'm studying philosophers. Philo, it's obviously someone who's a bit strange to cover. I'm just trying to think the best way to go where I'm going. I'm going via a mate's place, going to check on the if there's been a shipment from China, and then I'll continue my walk. Philo, instantly you pick him up, and there's a few things. He's in the Greek philosophy tradition, so he's a Jewish person. So the Greeks have taken over Alexandria, and as is the case, the native population there, the Egyptians, have a client's population. So a lot of the displaced Jewish populations were in there as people who are favourable to, it's sort of like a rented crowd for taking it over. So he was in Alexandria, which is the port at the top of the Nile Delta, and in terms of the ancient world was on Cairo and that section, because it was a purely river-based culture. So for Egypt to actually be part of a Greek culture, you couldn't actually have the Greeks, basically you had to have a port there, and that was Alexandria, set up by Alexander the Great. And so the Greeks took over the Ptolemaic or Ptolemaic Empire, and there's a sort of a whole series of things, and I don't know, I think there's a whole lot of cities which were in existence, so very few greenfield cities set up by Alexandria, but there was just heaps and heaps of cities called Alexandria as Alexander came along the place. And so it was Philo of Alexandria, and there was a large client Jewish population which was sort of just hoping there. Now Egypt is a fabulously G'day mate. Fabulously wealthy place, and it basically was the granary. So the climate had changed, and as sort of North Africa was drying up, the granaries were shrinking, and a lot of the nature of the Roman Empire that has a fragmentation and a thing, but it was also there was soil degradation, overpopulation, bad farming practices, which led to food crises, which led to people going to cities, which led to, give the people wheat and all that type of stuff. And so your food became more variable, you needed more trade to get various things. That's not too healthy, that stop over there. So you've got all those sorts of things happening, and so you have the Greek tradition, and there's really sort of like real confusion getting in philosophy. So although we sort of pick up one aspect of Greek philosophy, there was many different varieties of it. There's the Pythagorean philosophy, which is to do with monism, that the number and idea, some sort of, you know, some sort of abstract material there. And then you had three schools, and the actual schools are I've got these things that you would you'd recognize, three basic schools of Greek philosophy. So the Greeks had come in, and the Jewish people are more adaptable, and they've picked up Greek philosophy. How do you say it? Greek philosophy. And it's picked up Greek philosophy, and Greek ideas. And so they're speaking Greek, and Philo himself is criticized because he could no longer read Hebrew. He was actually, so imagine back then not being able to read Hebrew, and wasn't really connected to the oral traditions of Torah. Like, he was a sort of like, I don't know, a white person writing the history of the Aboriginals, or the First Nations, they call it First Nations, Indigenous people. He was sort of an Indigenous person, but he'd lost the language and stuff like that. And there were basically three, it's a very primitive philosophy, which is sort of emerging from Babylonian philosophy, and monism, which is picked up by Leibniz and the people up there, which led to the modern digital era. So monism is saying that there's a dot in a circle, and there's many threads of monadism through it. And it's interesting that the actual symbol for monad is the actual hydrogen atom as it's drawn. So there's all these resonances going through it. So you've got Pythagoras, who had a bit of a cult of numbers, and there's also a Jewish cult of numbers, and I think it was 3, 7, and 10, if I remember. So this is the whole thing. I've just read the information and can't go back in and go out. So Philo also wrote about the specialty of numbers. Now, it seems to be the go-to thing where people it's sort of proxy for things you can't understand. So Elon Musk will talk about innovation, space and Mars, and people say, I don't really, well, neither does Elon Musk. It was just the sort of an allegory or a code for something beyond human understanding. So for them, some mathematics was evidently evidence of something beyond human understanding. But there were three schools of Greek thought. Each of the Stoicists, the Lyceum of Aristotle, and the Academy of Plato. And they basically had three modes of thought. And so, but they're all those three things, which the Academy, Lyceum, and Stoicism, all those things have origins, words in which they sound great. He was very Stoic and stuff like that. Or he's an academic, or the school Lyceum. But they all have sort of astoundingly very benign interest or benign origins of their names. So starting up with Academy, the Academy was founded on the house of Academos, someone who used his logic to solve the problem. Some annoying Spartans have turned up trying to find out where Helen is. Helen of Troy's not to happen. This is the first run through. And so Academus does this, and he's basically got the idea of state-sponsored thought in the academy. Then that's within the building, so that's a property. And then you've got Aristotle, who moves into a temple. Now, you've got to understand that a property is a property. People don't normally go there, whereas temples are always open, because it's like a supermarket. You've got to go there. You've got to have a sacrifice. If it's not open, people go there, but it's sort of restricted. And so Lysanium is it means wolf-like, the wolf version of Apollo. So it's sort of like the Apollo cult, the Apollo god, is someone who'd go around the sun. And I've forgotten what you've got. Mercury, the winged messenger, who goes really quickly, but Apollo, I think, is associated with the moon, worship of the moon. But there's a legend there, and it's a bit like McDonald's. You've got the McCafe, you've got the restaurant, you've got the oh my god, Father, there's people, it's having a talk. The loudspeakers are a tad loud there. So so you have the wolf version. So Lysanium, though people don't know, people know about Aristotle, and you really need something to hang onto it. So Aristotelian came across. Now the Stoics, Stoicism comes from this group of people, and they're probably like the almost equivalent of Protestants, in that they wanted to avoid, make their culture, their logic, not based on an individual or ceremony or anything like that. It's like a open source. It was basically open source philosophy, and Stoicism comes from the name Painted Porch. So there was a particular temple where people would hang around in Athens, and it was a porch, and it was painted with scenes here. And so we'll meet at the Painted Porch. And then it was the school of Zeno, and they sort of decided, well, it won't be the school of Zeno. We'll say it's the school of philosophy of guys who turn up against the Painted Porch. Now, Stoicism was one of the ancient philosophies, and I was surprised to find out that Seneca, who is this sort of absolutely crazy lightweight philosopher, was a Stoicist. So let's go across here. I'm just going to finish up now for a very short time while I I get on to checking on my stuff. It's 14 minutes already to come here, keep going. So I'm back on the stuff at this porch of the Glenbrook Institute of Advanced Studies. No, Advanced Concept Institute, and picking up my stuff, which has come from China. And what can you say? It's a little bored. I'll maybe talk about it at the moment, but I'm first focusing on Stoicism. So you're the Stoics, the Platonic school, Plato's school, which is the academic school, and then you got the Aristotelian school. So the Aristotle came up and he had a system of answers. So it was like a Aristotle was perhaps like your Microsoft Windows, and Plato perhaps a bit like Mac, not quite, and then Stoics it would be like your Linux system, sort of a bit more open source, no major corporation funding it, and it's to come up with it, and they have different things of non-generative but reductive logic to drive them all. And if you like, the Stoics have got a reduced logic set to work with, as compared to the Aristotelians. The Aristotelians still have syllogism. So a syllogism basically is what we would call now junk logic. That is, all animals have four legs, and a dog is an animal. Therefore, I can tell you, logically, a dog must have four legs. It sounds crazy, and that's syllogistic. And if you could have a more cut-down version, a syllogistic is having four legs. Having more Stoics would reduce it even further to such and such a statement is true. And if I build something from true statements, put them together, it therefore follows that that is also true. And really, we have really sort of extracted the cappuccino of philosophy to pick the sorry, the best thing. You can see, hear me crunching along. I don't know whether you can hear that. So the Stoics would say, if A is true, B is true. There's some sort of link between A and B. Therefore, that would mean that C is true. So in terms of the Bertrand Russell thing, it would be a set of logic operators, sort of Boolean operators, or cut down, no probabilistic views or anything like that. Then cut it further down to true and false, and then possibly even cut it further down. You have a series of logic, and idea is that you could, with this logic set, apply. And given this is around the time of Christ, so Philo was of that logic school. Something also surprised me is Seneca, the philosopher, is also of that Stoic school, so Zeno, and they sort of, it was interesting for me to actually have a quick read and actually see how the schools lock together, as in terms of the real estate of, and obviously the schools would be at different positions. Oh my god, I don't know if you can hear that, that's the bird. I think I heard the female there. So there's the whipbird in Australia, and it does that whip sound, and occasionally you get two males doing a chirp off. Oh yeah, there are two males, you can hear it, two doing this chirp off, and the whipbirds are this beautiful sound. The female, when the female is in the area, it goes ah! At the end of it. Ah! So I'm not sure the audio version. And the sort of, it's a bit strange here. The females have all the plumage, the beautiful voices and stuff like that in the world. It's actually swapped over. The boys have the beautiful plumage and the stuff like that. You might think that I suppose males have something which is sort of like a big ugly head, like the giraffe head is a very big ugly one. Well, that being said, there's a few interesting stories. Just around us, there's these satin bowerbirds which are mimics, and one example of these few mimic stories is that I just heard that this person had two guinea pigs, and the guinea pigs died, and then, to their horror, they could hear the guinea pigs chirping, or I don't know what guinea pig sounds make. They could hear the guinea pig sound, but it was somewhere in the garden, and then it was somewhere up in the roof. And of course, one of the birds had decided to mimic what's going on. And our mimic story is that bird is now mimicking my wife's wake up alarm, and so she's trying to sleep in, and she suddenly hears the wake up alarm. Hello, it's a tough world, isn't it? It's just a little kid walking and falling over. So you've got the and there's various cases like people down at Euroka clearing, or in off in the bush, people having place set up a bit early, a few days early, and they're all having beers, opening the beers, and then drinking it all up. We're not supposed to have any beers. The women folk are coming, and so the women folk come to this area, and they listen to these birds, and they're mimicking sounds, and it's like this, the exact sound of a tinny being opened. Of course, the men are exposed. But that is a true story. But also a true story is when there were heaps of Japanese tourists, they'd come up and photograph these birds, and of course, back in the day when the digital cameras, the cameras were making that they would stop shooting, and the birds would continue the noise coming along, and that's a few things. And the bird that I've got at Taronga Zoo has probably put a iPod to shame. The amount of things it can do the full Star Wars sounds, including the rumble of the spaceship. How it does it, and changing the beat and everything. And they hear it once and put it through. And what I really think this is that it's an evolutionary hangover. A number of these birds in Australia, the bird situation was really there. So that's just a side on as we go on our journey of stoicism. So if you can imagine syllogism, which is sort of Platonic philosophy is more raw philosophy. Aristotelian philosophy is applying sort of logical principles to help you through, and Stoic philosophy is a cut down one. And it really went on basically human happiness, and you know, no matter how shit things are, be happy, don't worry, be happy is a stoic philosophy. But it's also now I think the actual stoic philosophy has really been hard welded into my scientific philosophy, in that people are a bad person is a victim of their own bad philosophy. They can't go, and I just read, it's like a dog chained to a cart. It has to go with it, so its entire existence is chained to their bad deeds. So there's a certain set of beliefs. Now, this is very, very interesting, in that the Philo is developing these beliefs and fusing it with the Jewish religion, and back in the day you had the problem of God being completely abstract, so abstract that he couldn't actually get in and actually make anything happen, and you had if things happen, there wasn't the idea of setting up the laws, g'day mate, the laws of nature, and just letting it rip. And so what you'd do is that you'd basically at the start of time get the quantum wave functions just peachy, and the rest of the universe is a done deal, as weird as that can be. But you had the idea of these agents, this agency, which wasn't God, and whether it could be created or not created. And Philo at the time came up with this sort of mutation of Platonic philosophy called, I think it was Logos, and this is an agency of God which wasn't created but did the actual heavy lifting of creation. Therefore, creation could have some flaws in it and stuff like this. So it never was. It's actually part of God, not quite. And you can see that this is really setting the stage for the latest prophet. It's coming along to be fused with this Platonic Greek idea, and you can have a prophet who's like an antenna on channel God, being able to pick up channel God. I'm channeling God, what's God is saying, and be Jesus Christ. So you can see here, reading Philo's work, that there's, and this is just me, it's not a don't take this as an authority. So if you're going to quote, your people will needle you. You say, oh, bloody hell, you're not listening to bloody podcast. Where? From what? From Australia? My godfather. Absolutely. Piss off. So don't do it. Be warned. Don't do it. However, Philo is basically putting, if you can imagine building Jesus Christ's submarine in the dry docks, he's beginning to bring in some aspects of it. He's got an agency of the big, more abstract God, and he's not created by God. He's a possibly an aspect of God to go forward, and he's there to on the intervening side. So you've got the Christian religion, which has got the abstract God, Jesus, which comes in for major advertisements intervening, and then you've got another level of Greek level of intervention, which is the Holy Spirit, or the idea of angels, the angelic form of God. So basically, Jesus would come in on your board meeting, say this, and then at your sales desk, where everything actually does happen, you'd have the Holy Spirit there, and then right up the top of the board meeting, the board structure, you'd have God there. Now, Philo had it in there. And so with all these philosophers, they write so much, or so much, and they translate it, and people have got this tremendous goodwill in translating some of their stuff. So Philo was a Greek person, and there is something which is just quote from him, which is just almost edible, and this is one of the things I sort of like reading quotes, because it summarizes your thoughts, but also when you read someone and they've lost all his works, they can only reconstruct it from fragments, and then you go to wiki quotes and there's pages of quotes attributed to this person, and they turn out to be, when you put them in, you know, they're made up, but this isn't made up. And that was be tolerant of all men, because each one is fighting a great battle, which basically says that every person, there is no person who isn't dissatisfied, or hasn't, you know, there's no person who goes, this is great. And people who exist in the advertising world, that is, who buy Coke or buy a gas barbecue, or I don't know, get their roof cleaned, they're suddenly bang out of the universe, and they're in a different universe where they're just innately happy, and they're no longer fighting a battle. And I think a lot of people want to fight their own battle, and part of it, you know, fighting their own battle, is clearing the battlefield of everybody else's battle. So your battle is the most enormous one. So the thing that you're doing at the moment, the spotlight from the universe shines on what you're doing. It's the most important thing. And there's sort of this awesome feeling that it doesn't matter, of course. It doesn't matter, because everyone is actually, not that they don't care about you, they care so much about themselves. And you have Philo coming in. Oh, here's a fantastic ride on dinosaur. Unfortunately, I'd love to have it to give to my kids. So sad, but they're all huge. Couldn't possibly fit in something so cute and nice. However, so this is, I'm walking. I was supposed to be drinking, but I'm making it go to the toilet, so there's no way. So this is to drink, to have get my hydraulic pressure up, so that when I do a blood test on me, I just go through. But I don't know. I don't think I can get to do it. So I'm just really trying to get back to the line of thought there. That really, well, look, you would get distracted if you suddenly saw a dinosaur. And what happens is that you've got a limited register, and you're feeding information into it, and then suddenly the information you fed into it, green dinosaur, kids, do I do it? And it's all disappeared to get it going up. But we've got Philo, he's in Alexandria, and he's taking bits of Greek philosophy, Jewish philosophy, sticking it together, and doing very something what you tend to do if you're not from a major school, which is sort of an interesting aspect, is that you are forced to be a gun for hire. And he was a little bit of a gun for hire, and you're forced to actually take on philosophies, mould them and shape them, and you've actually got slightly different parts, and you he's putting it together. And so he's putting the proto, I don't think it was his work led to Christianity, but it's a lot of things that are coming together in the Greek world. And the Stoicism is also got sort of the virtue coming in. Now, it's probably a bit unfair saying that all quotes are a bit suspect, but basically a quote has to be crafted by a quotesmith, so it comes in and go, wow, that sounds good. Oh, it comes from wow. It's sort of like having a push bike with a Porsche symbol on it. Wow, that push bike can really go fast. I don't have to think very much. I can just go out and use it and stuff like that. So there's a whole series of things where Seneca is forging things together, and he's sort of Greek Jewish thing, and he's recasting the Jewish religion in not necessarily naming Yahweh, but saying it's monotheistic and sort of finding things which are halfway through. So he's the ideal person from when you have the Romans trying to manage the Holy Land and the Jewish people. So the Jewish people are different things in their own homeland. There is a different story to the Jews in different areas. So the Jews are your sort of filler Roman Empire, and the entire thing is that you're Romans, you've got Roman citizens. Now the thing to note is that once you become a Roman citizen, all your children turn into Roman citizens. So sort of like the sons of veterans or something like that. Yeah, I think I would have to say that the situation of veterans at the moment are very similar to that. So fellows in this area. Now the sort of headline issue for me is that Philo is very much into Roman politics and stuff like that, and very much across everything, the Jews and Romans and stuff like that. So he's not someone who's a cricket commentator, and there's a rugby match that they play across there. The Roman Jewish thing is he's a commentator on that. He's trying to fix it up together. And at that time, the Romans kill off Jesus. They crucify him. And you can see, sort of, I suppose what is amazing is that there has been, before Jesus Christ, there was so little crucifixion. And sort of like a pause, seems to be a pause in the crucifixion. And it's not recorded. It became such a tool of trade that it wasn't really significant, so it didn't get recorded. But so you got Philo in Jerusalem around the time of Christ, not a mention of anything closely related to it. And so for me, I think that's a miracle. It's a miracle. It was not meant to be. It was not meant to commentate. It was one of these gods, these things that Jesus Christ is in the street there, and Seneca goes out. What crowd? The miracle of Seneca missing, not Seneca, Philo missing Christ. Now what is happening is that you've got a fairly rapid succession of people. I've forgotten who the actual Caesar was. There's Augustus, then there's Claudius, and then there's Caligula. Caligula follows Claudius, or vice versa. I think Caligula's first. And so Caligula is making a bit like Caligula, Donald Trump, making bad decisions, because I don't think you could say Caligula's a deal maker. If I dare say, Donald Trump's idea of making a deal is forcing people to take his deal. You know, you have one option, that you let's make a deal. There's absolutely nothing deal-like in the way that Donald Trump operates. It's just that America wins, everyone else loses for the moment. You know, there's this sort of, everyone is, I think, tolerating him. But if you can imagine Donald Trump saying, like Donald Trump said, oh, I like Greenland, America's great, fly flags everywhere. And so one of the things was that Caligula was saying, you've got to have a statue of me up in every temple, franchise temple. And they were saying that the temple in Jerusalem would have a statue up there. Now, having statues is sort of like, it's not as bad as it could have been. It's sort of like the temples were a bit like huge shopping centres, and different things, I don't know what the, you know, Victoria's Secret and what is it, something or other shop, you know, they're not as bad as people now. It's not like how everyone's got this, oh, I don't know. I was just really trying to think, I can see it. Oh, this is where your memory's going, oh crap, I wish I could remember. There's a store that we used to go in all the time, it painted dark green with scents, and I cannot remember the name of that store. Doesn't matter. But and you've also got to understand, putting statues up wasn't as hard as it seems. So one thing that the ancients got into doing is mass producing statues, and it is basically injection molding. So you have your mold of your statue, and then you pack it with clay, cut the clay up, coat the inside of the clay with wax, and rebuild it again with holes in it, you draw it. So the ancients, obviously you don't wind up putting you don't build a copper, a bronze skin around a the original thing. There's a process in which they could pump out a fair number of statues, and the statue maker, obviously, statues weren't actually very useful things, mind you. Sort of like advertising billboards. They're there, they communicate information, but I don't think enough a billboard has actually added to the environment. In fact, it's over the top. So basically, you just need a statue of a billboard, and they can mass produce them. There's none of these statues left, because they're bronze, and people, when they take something, they top of the statue, and you can actually punch the statue up. It's actually rather satisfying to bash up a bronze statue. There's a few bronzes left. Most of the statues you see are the cheaper ones, which are the pure marble ones, and they might be the inside and stuff like that. And they're discovering a lot of problems that people would go into a statue shop and they'd say, I like a statue of XYZ. And then what would happen is that they go out the back, bring us a statue of XYZ. Have you got one in the back, Cheryl? Oh, yes, I do. And they go out the back and quickly carve in fairly rudely the name. Oh, this would help you. No, that wouldn't work that out. We're just going to sand the same one. And so a lot of the likenesses have been a not probable likeness. And by the time you've sold about everyone's got a statue of such and such, if you had the real statue, you'd be stuffed. So you have to go out and look at the fictionalized things. So a lot of these busts you see with these people, you have to question this going across. But the key thing is wanting to put Caligula wanting to put it up there and trying to actually negotiate this not happening. Now, the I suppose one thing is that the temple in the so the original temple put there is of Solomon, way back. The great temple was wrecked, and of course this was, you know, long memory. If you want to get to win the Holy Land, don't worry, you can use your, you know, the important thing is to know that the Holy Land can type a lot of legions, and they're not really good at civil defence. They are good at, you know, when there is a big massed army up and everyone gets together in a killing field, and you can kill a whole fucking lot of them. Okay, so that's where you want to use your legions. And so there's an idea that it is actually a more sensible thing to spend a heap of money and get across, and then also doing that is your client people. So there's a lot of Jews in Rome and everywhere. I don't know what was happening, how you got so many. So it made good sense. Yeah, good sense. I'm outside McDonald's and the stench is just chokingly awful. Yeah, so the the Romans put in a huge amount of money, put in the temple, and it's sort of like the Roman Empire pays for the temple, builds the temple using Roman technology, the Roman foremans, you know, Roman.com type of stuff, and the odd thing, and it's all okay. You can move your troops around, and then a bit like South Africa, they need heaps of roads to move their legions along the place, and so it was all tickety-boo, and the temple was built, and it was only lacking the commemorative opening plaque by the Romans themselves, and this is something that they couldn't really get across. So it wasn't quite like North Korea, the Hermit Kingdom and all that type of stuff, but it was close. Oh, crap. So you can hear the Australian traffic signs. We'll get there eventually, mate. I suppose it always grabs me, was it the floor, the ground... Oh, ground indicating tactile tiles. Oh, this bit, I'll just stop this time. Okay, starting up again on Philo the Philosopher. I've just been in, had my blood test at the local shopping centre, or the local village up the mountain, about 2 kilometres up from home. I think it's about 2 kilometres. And I'll go and speak now. Normally, I've got to get home quickly, so I've had the blood test. Wasn't able to hydrate properly. Quite painful for blood test there to check how I'm going. And what else? Haircut and that type of stuff. And I'm right near a busy freeway going back, so this sort of the main artery across into the rest of New South Wales, one of the major arteries into sort of western New South Wales. So there's a lot of noise and trucks on this road. It's a four-lane highway. So it's all happening. So Philo the philosopher, Philo of Alexandria, you got an idea about where Alexandria was up in the Nile Delta, and why the Greeks had it as their administration centre. Obviously, in terms of communication, you didn't have to do, and basically, if you have an uprising, you can get in your Greek troops early on. There's a number of reasons why they had it there. Then the Romans taking over the Greek world, and this large expat Jewish population, where they're not necessarily, the Jews aren't very well treated by one group, so they're sort of negotiation stuff. And you've got the temple, that the Roman version of the temple built again. A very important aspect to it. So you've got the Jewish religion, it wasn't going through a theoretical upgrade. That they really basically had Yahweh and God right there, and so a lot of the philosophical questions weren't being asked in the Jewish religion, and about how God can be abstract. What is God? Is it abstract? And does he intervene? The ideas that Philo borrowed this of the Greek culture. He's Jewish, but can't speak Hebrew, doesn't know the Jewish oral tradition of things going down. And so he adds this logos stuff to it, which I can see obviously doesn't followed straight onto the Jesus Christ and the angels, but there's a sort of numerology and stuff like that. And you see that numerology happening in the Christian church, that it has to be the significance of the 3 days, dead for 3 days, but also the choirs of angels, the 3 by 3 making 9 choirs of angels, and the need in this medieval thought for angels and gods and spirits and stuff like that. And Philo had a three body thought, in that there was the mind, your consciousness, there's your body, and your spirit. And reading some of his writings, he's got this understanding of spirit, where he sort of mixes spirit and mind together some of the time, but the rest of the time the spirit is a three-way. So this division between mind and body is something that Descartes brought up, and I suppose it's sort of a philosophical question we almost don't ask nowadays, because if you've got a mental problem, you can do something to the body, you can put an electromagnetic wave or a shock treatment or a lobotomy. There's a physiological link between it. So back then you had the idea of the spirit, and come across. Now, in a certain sense, I actually just the most vaguely agree with that mind, body, spirit, the idea of someone's spirit, someone's essence of action and belief structure carries forward. And we sort of have that in a bit of our technology, that so-and-so invents something, such an invention is associated with that person, the history of it. So can see this spirit of things. Now I'm just trying to think, I've just really got to make sure I'm not confused on all that. So it is interesting that Seneca, in the fusion of ideas, the Jewish and the Greek, really comes up with a sort of the prototype shell for Christianity. However, there is no suggestion that he was referenced. I think those forces in the hello, that's great. There's someone talking on their mobile phone. I love that deal. An old guy doing that. So yeah, we'll read that and obviously read it again. There's just so much. Almost fake stuff going on. So there's actually quite a lot I've read about Philo, and that stuff I read, I can't quite remember, but it can't be right. There's sort of commentaries on various things. So that's Philo the philosopher. Just shutting it off. Okay, sorry about this.
Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them and tell others. Thanks for listening.